You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 4th of February, 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at radioalbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from russjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
Well, I'm hanging in there, my friend. This is a rough time, but for some reason, the work that I do just seems more and more satisfying as time goes on.
Well, I certainly learn a lot from listening to you. I think you're probably the most popular podcaster that we have at the network, and rightly so. There's so much new information that you bring to us, and a lot of the time it's a different way of looking at things as well. And a lot of people would think that with what was going on in Ukraine and how they have a lot of nationalist organizations over there, a lot of nationalist music, that we would be very supportive of Ukraine. But we're not, because Ukraine has sort of thrown its lot in with the European Union and the globalists from America at the expense of the people. And it seems that they're trying to really cut their nose off to spite their face. They want to go against Russia because of the Holodomor, but in doing so, they've fallen in with an even worse crowd, the globalists. And what's going on over there at the moment is massive censorship, of course, which America is approving of. The United States has waded into a row over media censorship in Ukraine, backing a ban on opposition TV channels, as both the EU and President Volodymyr Zelensky's own father expressed grave concerns over the impact on free speech. In a statement issued on Twitter Wednesday, the American embassy in Kiev wrote that it supports efforts yesterday to counter Russia's malign influence. It described the shuttering of broadcasters as in line with Ukrainian law, in defense of its sovereignty and territorial integrity. We must all work together to prevent disinformation from being deployed as a weapon in an info war against sovereign states, the missive concluded. Earlier that day, Zelensky signed into law a decree that took a total of 8 news outlets off the airwaves in a move backed by the country's National Security and Defense Council. However, the claim of nefarious Russian influence was met with skepticism, given that the outlets are based in Ukraine, where they are operated by and watched by Ukrainians. Now, this is a little bit similar to Biden calling for Fox News to be removed, and also censorship of all support for Donald Trump and declaring the opposition terrorists. Isn't that a similar thing that's going on here? They're declaring the opposition to be a threat to territorial security. What do you make of this, Matt?
This is exactly what you mean. You're completely correct. In this case, you have the three big ones, 112, ZIK, and Newsom channels, which have been removed. The claim is that it's from Russian influence, which is sufficient to kick them off the air. But, you know, as a way to answer the so-called constitutionalists in this country, the Ukrainian constitution explicitly says that censorship is forbidden. Article 15, that even language, political affiliation, any connection like that, in Article 24 can't have any. You can't be banned based on these things. They even list in Article 34 the reasons why you could censor people. And it's exclusively for things like criminal activity, protection of health, things that are secret, state secrets and things like that, and absolutely nothing else. So the Constitution is nothing but a piece of paper. But the most important thing to remember is that Ukraine is a colony in the United States. None of this has anything to do with the Ukrainian government. The Ukrainian government exists and functions because of American subsidies. The U.S. Embassy in Kyiv is the governing body of Ukraine. They have no functional economy. They have no functional currency. Everything is based on American dictates right now. And since Russia is the only enemy, as far as the U.S. is concerned, the Russo-Chinese alliance, the colonies are going to do the same. But, you know, the justifications are the same. This is going to be a rough year as far as censorship is concerned. And these people are even claiming that this has nothing to do with censorship of ideas. Then they list the ideas that they want gone. Ukraine is and has been for most of this century a relatively pro-Russian place. They don't necessarily want to be absorbed into it, but Russia is doing much better than the average Ukrainian is. Crimea has done very, very well as an autonomous part of Russia. Even in the far west, you don't have this massive contempt for, I mean, they have contempt for things Soviet, but in the official ideology, Soviet and Russian are the same thing, which of course is outrageous.
Well, you have to feel sorry for the Ukrainians. I mean, obviously they want national sovereignty, but the way to go about it is not to take a load of money from America and have a fake revolution sponsored by America. It needs to come from the grassroots. It needs to be organic. Let's have a look at the reason for the censorship. In addition, the group is owned by one of the country's elected MPs, Taras Kozak. Authorities also say they have ties to political leader Viktor Medvedchuk, who heads up the country's largest opposition party, which is called Opposition Platform for Life, the OPZZH. Medvedchuk himself is considered to be a close ally of President Vladimir Putin. In a furious statement published on Wednesday morning, Medvedchuk wrote that the move to suppress opposition-leaning media was absolutely illegal and amounted to the use of violence, bullying, and coercion against dissent. Zelensky dreams of clearing the information field, he argued, so that the dialogue between the president and the Ukrainian people takes place at the intellectual level of a kindergarten. The politician added that the decision came in the wake of falling approval ratings for the ruling administration. However, he argued that the threat to Zelensky's popularity came not from television channels, but the fact that everyday ordinary people are picking up bills for utilities, receiving no help in preventing coronavirus, sitting at home because of a senseless lockdown, and deprived of the right to speak freely in their native language. He noted that the decision came amidst tumbling approval ratings for Zelensky and fierce criticism from the opposition over a lack of access to COVID-19 vaccines. I guess that's because the best COVID-19 vaccine for them to use would obviously be Sputnik V coming from Russia. Matt, what do you know about this Medvedchuk? What is he like? Is he right-wing? Is he nationalist? Is he communist? What is he?
Well, you know, he was born in 1954, so he is from the Soviet era. He was the chief of staff to Leonid Kuchma, someone who I've written more or less positively about in the past. Allegedly, he's close to Vladimir Putin. That might be exaggerated, which, of course, apparently, as far as the Ukrainian government is concerned, automatically means that he can't say anything. And believe it or not, he was one of the lawyers assigned to defend Vesel Stus. I did a whole show on Stus as the Ukrainian Solzhenitsyn. So that's his situation. He does lead with people like Boyko and a few others, the For Life opposition party. Movement or coalition, I should say. But one of the reasons in this, and again, this comes from the U.S., they're just using this Zelensky. You know, we've done a whole show on Zelensky, if you remember. One of the reasons that they're putting these stations off the air, but the main reason is that they're allegedly funded by the Russian government. Well, no one has bothered to look at this group. It's a group of NGOs that created this law and brought this law onto Ukraine. The group of NGOs is called the Reanimation Package of Reforms Coalition, to be, you know, the literal translation of it. But if you look at these NGOs, and I've gone through them all, many of them I'm familiar with, Ukrainian Center for Independent Political Research, financed by USAID, the National Endowment for Democracy, UNDP, the European Commission, Kingdom of the Netherlands, British Embassy in Kiev. Another one is Europe Without Barriers, where you have things like the Swedish International Development Agency, Group 484, PASOS, which is one of Soros's groups, the European Policy Center. Another one is the Platform for Human Rights. There, again, USAID, Council of Europe, Freedom House, Kingdom of the Netherlands again. I could go on and on. Every one of these NGOs that wrote this law and hoisted it on Ukraine, of course, is financed either by the U.S. or the EU. And these NGOs, of course, are the voice of corporate America and the European Union Government Association. So for them to say that Russian government ownership, which they have not established completely and shortly not control, if that's the reason, and it's never been a reason before, but if that's the reason for getting rid of these things, it's pretty hilarious to see that this is purely the super rich of the world hoisting this on Ukraine. And they're just hoping, I guess, that no one bothers to look into these NGOs that wrote this law. And but I guess I'm the first one who has.
Well, they talk about their values that they're trying to protect. And of course, after hearing about all those NGOs, you know that that's globo homo values that they're trying to protect. And just as we see happening in America, there are now calls to impeach the president over there. Later on Wednesday, one of the bloc's MPs announced it would begin the process of trying to impeach the president following the crackdown. Mikhail Podolyak, an advisor to Zelensky, explained the move, saying that it's clear that sanctions on Mr. Medvedchuk's TV channels are not about the media and not about freedom of speech. It is just about effectively countering fakes and foreign propaganda. Without action, he argued, the opposition media would kill our values. However, the EU broke ranks with Washington on Wednesday, sounding the alarm over the potential consequences for basic human rights in the country. Foreign Diplomatic Service spokesman Peter Stano told Interfax Ukraine that attempts to regulate against disinformation should not happen at the expense of freedom of the media and should be carried out with full respect for fundamental rights and freedoms and in accordance with international standards. Well, how can they say this is about killing off values when it specifically says in the Constitution that there is no ideology that everybody has to have and that censorship is completely banned? What do you make of this, Matt?
Well, it's no surprise. You know, I know the Ukrainian Constitution. It's been around, it hasn't been around that long. But obviously, it's not taken very seriously. Again, this comes from the private sector. And one of the things, and actually that group of NGOs put out a, and the Ukrainian Security Agency too, they put out a list of justification. And one of them is that those TV outlets, news outlets, enjoy a high trust from the local population. Because they're trusted, they can do a lot of damage to the ideology that's promoted by the regime. But I want to talk about psychological projection. The third justification they have here, they list these TV stations and they say they do not apply the principles of freedom of speech and journalistic standards in their work. Their reporting is imbalanced. This is one of the justifications. They do not apply freedom of speech and journalistic standards. Can you imagine the neurotic mind that was going to create something like this? Because they don't do these things. And they, of course, are purely objective and accept freedom of speech entirely. They're going to shut down freedom. This is not just projection and really deflection to a great extent. This is cognitive dissonance. I mean, these people are sociopaths, because only a sociopath could possibly have this cognitive dissonance and have it not bother them. So there's a psychological aspect of this, too. But believe it or not, they say this. Most of their justifications other than that are just opinions that they don't like. Then these NGOs go on to say, I have a joint statement here, that they do not constitute an attack on freedom of speech. And you're seeing this in the U.S. too. The idea is that freedom of speech, that the definition of speech is that which accepts liberal ideology. In this case, you know, the EU and all the rest of it. They're trying to redefine speech as something that supports them. Everything else is propaganda and therefore can legitimately be banned.
Well, it's like the way they've redefined democracy as meaning liberal values as well, liberalism. Let's have a look at the rest of the media there. Almost all news outlets in Ukraine are bankrolled by wealthy individuals, and Zelensky himself came to power with support from the OnePlus1 media group, which operates 8 channels in the country. And we did an episode on that and how Zelensky came to power. The conglomerate is owned by Igor Kolomoisky, a billionaire oligarch and former regional governor, who also happens to be Jewish. Ukraine already, and so is the president in actual fact, Ukraine already has among the most restrictive measures against media it considers to be harmful. Since the 2014 Maidan, it has put in place blanket bans on more than a dozen Russian outlets, including RT's news channels. The Interior Ministry has accused networks of spreading propaganda about the conflict in the east of the country. Ukraine should protect its media space from Russian aggression, a spokesman said at the time. Around 1 in 3 people living in the country describe themselves as a native Russian speaker, and entire cities in the east and southeast of the country conduct daily life in the language. The areas are also strongholds for much of the OPZZH's party's political support, with many Russian speakers supportive of closer ties with Moscow. The television channels now banned by Zelensky would, until now, have been a source of news and current affairs for many. This is really what Russia was worried about, wasn't it? That's why Russia went into the East. They said, if we don't go into the East, Ukraine will ban the Russian language, and the Russians that are there will lose all their identity, their heritage, they won't be able to communicate, all the rest of it. And this is exactly what is now going on. It's exactly what Putin gave as his reason for going into the East and taking Crimea, basically, because Crimea was, what, 90% Russian, something like that? Is that what's going on here, Matt, isn't it? It's they're just basically doing exactly what Putin predicted they would some years back, 5 or 6 years back, I think it was.
Yeah, a lot of pro-Russian people in Ukraine did this. You don't have this contempt for Russia like the American press wants you to believe. I did papers on this years ago, admittedly before the Maidan thing in 2014, that even in the West, you have a positive conception of Russia and Russians, something like 60%. That was from a Western sociological survey in Kiev. The fact that, you know, this is really nothing more than a spearhead for greater geopolitical aggression from the West. Media is essential to this. Ukraine is still at a fourth world status, despite it being one of the most educated countries in the world, one of the most civilized countries in the world. The economy has completely fallen apart, to the extent there is an economy. And here you have a very strong opposition movement that has some support from some of the TV channels, which are located in Ukraine. They even admit that they're high trust. They have to go. And that, in effect, removes the OPZZH, or the opposition platform for life, from having any kind of media presence at all. And so these guys, it's not so much that they don't believe that they're objective and they're doing the right thing even. It's that their constant redefinition of these terms. Freedom is to support the regime. Propaganda is anything that doesn't support the regime. And they're going to be, you're seeing this already, using these terms. I rang this bell, a decade ago. They're slowly redefining these terms so that when you use them in day-to-day speech, you start picturing something that we normally do. The word democracy, again, is classic. Even things like rights. You have these NGOs saying that banning all these people has nothing to do with freedom of speech, and then lists the opinions that they don't like. That's the only explanation. And so when you redefine the terms, you won't suffer from the cognitive dissonance that a normal person would.
Well, it's a third of the country that have had their television channels removed, basically. Kiev's ban on Russian film and TV channels has not gone down well with the Ukrainian public, according to new research, with close to half of the country being against the tough measures, which deny them a free choice of viewing. The Social Monitoring Center poll released on Monday found that 47% of respondents said banning Russian TV was a mistake. The punitive measures have also drawn criticism from press freedom watchdogs. Over 50% felt that the blacklisting of certain artists, as well as Russian films, was the wrong direction. Censorship of social media networks was even more unpopular, with only 42% agreeing with the government position that it was necessary for national security. So I think what we can tell from that is it's not just that they have been banning these TV stations, but they've actually been banning Russian singers, Russian films, and also meddling with the social media networks. So obviously 60% don't agree with the meddling with the social media networks, which is exactly what we're seeing going on in America at the moment. What do you make of this, Matt?
I guarantee you the numbers are much higher than that. And one of the things that even these people who want to ban Russian stations are saying is that, well, it might be them today. There's no reason it won't be us tomorrow. I hate to think that there's something big coming with the U.S. that may do against Russia such that they all these need to be banned. This is not just happening in Ukraine. But one of the proofs that many proofs that Ukraine is an American colony is the fact that the rhetoric used by these NGOs, many of them are American-based, and Zelensky himself, comes directly from the American media, how they're justifying banning this stuff in America. And many Ukrainians and Russians aren't even noticing that this is happening in America. And they're going to be justifying this. In the Ukrainian case, this is coming after the Navalny thing in Russia. Like in the U.S. case, it's been going on for a long time, the so-called stuff at the Capitol. What's their excuse? So now the press has to lie and make up stories about all this stuff, and they can't afford to have people hearing the other point of view. They've come right out and said that, well, truth can't drive out the lie. They admit this, and because of that, this stuff has to be banned.
Well, they're
including national security is one of the most ridiculous things, because again, these are all foreign-funded NGOs.
Well, they're banning the Russian TV channels now, and then next it will be the useful idiot nationalists that get banned, and then it will just be liberal democracy, liberal values, and that's it. That's all they will be able to see. Russian journalists are being seen as subversive. Kiev has also banned journalists from many Russian news organizations from entering the country and frozen their assets. Well, I mean, we do not understand that a lot of journalists are spies, so you know, I can understand them doing that. The decision was criticized by the International Committee to Protect Journalists, who called on Ukrainian authorities to refrain from banning information sources, be it ones with favorable or unfavorable coverage. Reporters Without Borders has also warned that the country's stance on the free press requires improvement. It ranks in the bottom half of their World Press Freedom Index, and they say that much more is needed to loosen the oligarchs' tight grip on the media, encourage editorial independence, and combat impunity for crimes of violence against journalists. Last week, a journalist from a Ukrainian TV news outlet was attacked live on air by a masked man who broke her microphone and branded the channel fascists. And this is the narrative that's being put out there, that the Ukrainians are neo-Nazis, and they're not. They're just following America. It's so ludicrous, and the Russians are being attacked as communists. And what this really is, it seems to me, is it's a war between the oligarchs, isn't it? And they're trying to get rid of one lot of oligarchs to please another lot of oligarchs. And there's no concern whatsoever for the actual people here who want to see TV channels that are in their own language. That's what's going on here, isn't it, Matt?
Well, you know, again, oligarch is one of these words that's, especially in English, being redefined. The initial oligarchy was a group of almost exclusively Jewish nouveau riche, who came into existence after the fall of the Soviet Union by having insider information on the privatization scheme. They were uniformly liberal. They were uniformly pro-Western, and American foreign policy was to support them. They even called democracy oligarchy. They weren't even shy about that. I did whole shows on this. But having someone with money by himself isn't automatically an oligarch. Someone who may be powerful. So oligarchy is very specifically about that one particular, almost entirely Jewish group of people from the 90s, who then, you know, took over. So, of course, you're going to have rich people who have all kinds of political opinions. That doesn't necessarily make them oligarchs. Now, in Ukraine, oligarch has been redefined even further to refer to, again, someone with money that doesn't support the European Union. So you have the so-called press freedom people, some of the same people who were in these NGOs that are banning the Russian press, saying the oligarchs have to lose power. Well, no liberal wants that. Liberalism is oligarchy, not just in Ukraine, but everywhere else. So they're redefining the term such that it's not so much having money, it's rejecting the European Union.
Well, and it's not just the TV channels that are being banned either. The Russian language itself is being banned. It appears the Russian language is now top of the target list. Earlier this month, a new law proclaiming Ukrainian as the state language came into force after being passed by the country's parliament. As a result, employees of service sector businesses, such as supermarkets, restaurants, cafes and barbershops, are required to greet and serve customers in Ukrainian alone. Only at the request of a client can they switch to another language for the sake of convenience, and breaking the law will carry a fine of almost $250 from next year. Given the average official salary is around $370, but often far less outside the capital, this is a significant sum. Almost one in three people living in Ukraine describe themselves as native Russian speakers, with entire cities in the east and south of the country conducting daily life in the language. Odessa, on the Black Sea coast, is well known for its unique dialect of Russian, inspired by the Yiddish of its historical Jewish population. Only a small proportion of Odessans speak Ukrainian at home, and it is unclear how well enforced the new directive will be there. Well, of course, it will be an excuse to go in there and go after them, but I doubt whether they will if there is a large Yiddish population there, or a large population that speak Yiddish. What do you make of this bit here about Odessa, Matt?
Well, when I first read that, I began to, well, probably what's going to happen, no different from the lockdowns. They tried to go after the Hasidic populations in Brooklyn and then backed off. Somehow the virus doesn't seem to infect them in the official mind. But trying to, what's going to happen, either it won't be enforced because there's so many people, or they'll enforce it and leave Odessa alone. I've done a lot of work on Odessa over the years as one of the hotbeds of Bolshevism in the turn of the century in Ukraine, because it's a very Jewish part of the country. It's one of the key areas in the new Khazaria, as they call it. Now, I'm glad they mentioned the official salary, $370, is just is shockingly low for, again, one of the most educated. Ukraine was the hub of the Russian electronics and chemical, really the scientific industries were based there. And to see them in third world status here, and it's going to get worse and worse and worse, you know, Russian firms, they're not going to invest in a place where they can't speak the language. I know guys are getting arrested for the stupidest things. You say thank you in Russian rather than Ukraine. The restaurant gets fined. Again, a lot of this comes from the COVID stuff. And you have noticed that the opposition bloc is condemning the lockdowns. And they're condemning the lockdowns partially because they know where it comes from. It doesn't come from native Ukrainians. Belarus did not have a lockdown. Absolutely zero. And yet they didn't suffer particularly any more or any less than any other country. So I have the feeling it's going to be, they're going to try to enforce it and just leave Odessa alone.
Well, it's against the UN law as well to do this. Additionally, with their attempt to mandate how local communities express themselves, lawmakers in Kiev risk falling foul of a United Nations resolution that calls on governments to promote the preservation and protection of all languages used by peoples of the world.
Well, Article 10 of the Constitution.
Hang on a sec, Matt.
Free development of Russian. Article 10 says Russian specifically will not be harmed, will not be touched. It says the free development of that language is guaranteed by law.
Ukraine has previously depended on support from friendly states in the UN over issues like Russia's reabsorption of the Crimean Peninsula in 2014, and there are no signs yet as to whether the international body will take it to task over its campaign to marginalize the use of other languages. if linguistic diversity is seen by some in the country as a challenge to their national identity, which is increasingly being defined in opposition to Russia, few areas of life in the country are free of politicization in this way. Ukraine, much of which historically fell under the Russian Empire and later was a constituent member of the Soviet Union, has spent recent years working to purge symbols of that shared history in an effort to differentiate itself. And really, I can't condemn them for trying to get rid of symbols of the Soviet Union. And they are actually doing that. They're saying, look, you're telling us we can't have National Socialist symbols. Well, we're not going to allow communist symbols either, because communism killed a lot of people as well. So, you know, I think it's a good thing that they are banning these Soviet symbols. But of course, Russia sees that as an insult to the Russians. What are your final thoughts on this, Matt?
Well, these days, the socialist movement in Ukraine is fully national. Even the Communist Party of the Russian Federation is almost completely national socialist. So they're redefining those communist symbols too. But as far as their old meaning is concerned, their Bolshevik meaning, it's a great thing to pull down these statues. But on the other hand, the official Ukrainians make a mistake by claiming that Soviets and Russians, these symbols are identical, and they're the same, pretty much the same empire. That is a mistake, and that's really what's driving a lot of this nonsense.
Well, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.